If you're one of the tens of thousands of people commuting between Ohio and Kentucky, you know all about this first story. The southbound lanes of the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge have been shut down for weeks after a destructive fire. Traffic has been in a tangle on all the bridges connecting Kentucky and Ohio. Just last night, four people were charged in connection with the fire that damaged steel beams under the bridge. Months of expensive repair work is ahead. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Nick Swartzel, filling in for Lucy May. I'm joined now by the Ohio Department of Transportation District 8 Public Information Officer, Kathleen Fuller. Welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Thank you. Appreciate you inviting us to be here today.
Of course. And Kentucky Transportation Cabinet District 6 Public Information Officer, Jake Ryle. Thanks for being here, Jake.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
So let's just get right into this. Kathleen, I want to start with you. What was the extent of the damage to the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge? It was pretty extensive, right?
Yes, it was very extensive. I guess you could just say a massive amount of damage, very significant damage was done to the bridge after it caught fire. Obviously, you know, we have girders that have been warped, melted, if you will, and the concrete deck between these two approach spans, which it's we refer to them as approach span number 4 and 3. So if you are traveling southbound or if you were to be on the ramp going to the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge itself, it would be the approach span number 4 is kind of the north one and then 3 is the south one. And it was basically a section of that concrete deck over both of those spans that was warped and separated from the girders underneath, and then the girders themselves, not only did they kind of bend and melt, so to speak, but they also severely compromised in how they reacted once, you know, the cooling took place, once the bridge was cooled from the fire. It's kind of hard to describe it without a visual, but basically they were starting to separate. So significant amount of damage.
Wow. Yeah. And if you've ever been underneath that bridge, you know those elements are gigantic. And it's kind of mind-boggling to think that damage happened. Do you have any idea how hot the fire would have had to have been to do that kind of damage?
No, I don't have a number on that. I would, you know, kind of defer that question to the Cincinnati Fire Department, which is doing the investigation and the numbers that they have. But obviously, it is extreme amount of heat. You know, this was obviously not a simple fire. It was engulfed in flames for a very significant period of time, all things considered, you know, with that fire. And I know people have seen the video of the fire coming up over the bridge itself in between the northbound and the southbound structures, kind of in basically engulfing that southbound approach to the bridge in fire. And again, I would have to defer to the fire department on those, the exact number.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Extremely hot is what it sounds like in really technical terms.
Yes.
So we're talking today about the repair work to the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email talk@wvxu.org. So I want to ask you both, and I'll start with Jake to get you in here. How do Kentucky and Ohio transportation officials coordinate with each other when it comes to a big problem like this?
Well, I would say the coordination, especially in an emergency response like this, was fantastic. It started right from the get-go. You know, I got the call at around 4:15 in the morning. We got out an initial press release shortly after that. You know, just being able to have our partners on that side of the river, being able to kind of bounce ideas off of them and have that emergency response where they know that we're able to help them, they can help us, and ultimately we can get the job done together.
Sure. Kathleen, do you have anything to add?
Well, yeah, it was a great response effort from everybody, really. You know, we were hitting the ground running. I know Jake took the lead with the very first initial release that went out from the agencies as far as transportation goes and the impact. And, you know, it's kind of funny because Kentucky or KYTC, they are responsible. They maintain, they operate, they own the bridges over the river itself, the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge. They own that. We are responsible for those approach spans. So, you know, we now know that we have this coordination effort that we've always worked well together, both agencies. I know from my previous experience in another district, and we've always had this great partnership. So, you know, it was just kind of, it was very natural, I guess you could say, when we got down, our press secretary and I got downtown, and of course, our folks were already down there from our Hamilton County Maintenance Garage, our structures department, our inspectors, our construction department. We had a lot of people already down there. And then there's, you know, our KYTC counterparts, our friends are right there with us, lockstep all the way through. So it's been great because, again, we have we already have a really good, solid partnership, but just seeing this in action during a crisis was really pretty incredible.
Yeah, it must be good to have that relationship pre-existing when you're dealing with such a complex and massive problem.
Yes.
Local 12 reported that the original design for the area under the bridge didn't include a playground, and I know that playground was one of the things that burned, might have had something to do with the start of the fire. Has ODOT been able to find records showing the agency approved the change and allowed the program, or no?
No, we've not found any records that approved the playground to be built under the bridge. Obviously, I think, you know, what you're referring to are some of the things that we have found were back stemming from 1989, the original plan for a fitness center under the bridge. As far as any approvals from ODOT, we have not found anything as of yet.
Okay. Talk about what crews have done so far to shore up the bridge and start demolition. I know there's been a lot of work that's already happened.
Yeah, tons of work that's going on in front of the scenes now, but also behind the scenes. You know, we did have to get the approach band number 4, the north one, shored up before we can even get anybody on top of that bridge or right under it to do the final inspections to know the extent of damage. So immediately, you know, we worked on getting that shoring plan in place, and we erected a series, I think, of 6 shoring towers. We got the equipment that was shipped in from New Jersey, and we got the initial 6 set up, and then we knew we would have to do more shoring towers to just start the demolition work. So then we had another 4 put in. Once the concrete deck work was largely completed, we were able to relocate the second set of 4 and to move them just a little bit south, because we'll need those again for the reconstruction. So we've got the bridge shored up so that it is stable. Obviously, a lot of concerns. There was a lot of danger with it not being shored up. We still are still concerned. I don't want to let everyone think that this is, you know, we still have an unsafe area, because while we're taking down the deck, and then, of course, we're getting ready to, we're now in the process of taking down the girders. The deck has been removed. We're working on the girders. We still have some concerns, because we don't know exactly how things are going to react from section to section as we go through. We did get down a couple of girders last night. Things went very well. They're working on the rest. You know, they're working on the others today, and we should have those girders hopefully by the end of the week, by the end of the day. Saturday, we'll have all the girders down. But again, it's been one of those. We've got a very methodical, very surgical approach to demolition, and we're watching it and being very, very careful when we make those cuts and being very precise so that we don't compromise what is good of the structure on either side of those approach bands.
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to ask a little more technical question. I don't want to get too much down in the weeds here, but a while back, Cincinnati City Council wanted some updates, and you were talking about a process, I think it was you, taking coupons. Is that a term that you are familiar with?
Yeah.
Can you explain
samples
to our listeners? Yeah, samples of, yeah, of the steel, I guess, right? Is that,
yeah,
is that correct?
So we had to do some initial testing. So we sent some samples. We refer to it as coupons, but it's also basically samples of the deck, as well as now we're also taking steel samples now that we have the girders coming down. So basically, you know, looking at the damage that was incurred and looking at the testing, we're also kind of sampling and testing, and there's, it's another term, sounding, the remainder of the deck on each side of the approach bands where we've already removed the concrete to test to make sure that all of the remaining portions of the concrete deck, that they are sound, that they are safe, and that we don't need to tear any more out and do replacement of that. We're also sampling the girders. We're going to be taking down a couple of the more severely damaged girders. Are actually, we're taking sections of those and shipping those, I believe, to Washington, D.C. for further testing and analysis because of that amount of heat to determine, you know, looking at the steel itself and how extensive the damage was based on the heat index for from the fire. So the coupons, basically it's sampling, and that's what we did initially to do some preliminary testing that we would have to do in to begin the design, or not to begin, but to incorporate that information into the design work for the redesign to rebuild the bridge.
I see. Thanks for going with me on that kind, yeah, of nerdy digression there. I hope our listeners were as fascinated as I was. What's next in terms of repairs for the bridge?
So, you know, obviously, you know, most or all the concrete deck is down. The demo has been done. That's good news. That's great. And again, we're hoping we don't have to take any more down, but we are doing those additional samplings or testings. Sounding work is, it's called sounding, but the rest of the girders will be coming down. And so the next, one of the next things you know, we've already received some of the bearings that had to be custom fabricated. These are bronze bearings. These are what will be what the girders will be affixed to rest on. We put the girders on these bearings. Those we've already received. We got those, that shipment expedited. That's fantastic. So they're on site right now. Our contractors, Great Lakes Construction, already has those. We are waiting on the girders to be fabricated. The fabricator is in Bowling Green, Kentucky. The steel is also being received there locally. So the steel is being made, and then that's going to be given to the fabricators, and they will make those girders. And we hope to have all of those shipped to us by the middle of January so we can start the rebuild. So again, all the demolition will be already be done. We should have everything pretty well wrapped up on the demo pretty soon. I mean, maybe largely by the end of the week or early next week. So we get the demo done. We'll be able to move forward as soon as those girders come in with the rebuild. You know, there'll be some other work that'll take place early in January. We do have a pier that has to be repaired as well. The pier that, if you look at the photos, and you can see a lot of damage to the pier, but it's where those two approach spans were coming together. And so you see that pier, and that pier cap was damaged. So we're going to repair the pier cap while we're waiting for those girders to come in. Once the girders are in, we get started with the rebuild, and hopefully, weather permitting, and of course, delivery of the materials permitting, we will be able to get everything wrapped up by the beginning of early March.
Well, lots of work that's been done already, lots of work ahead, it sounds like. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment, and later in the program, do our kids have way too many toys? Maybe we can all have a simpler Christmas. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Nick Swartzell, filling in for Lucy May. We continue our discussion on repairing the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge. My guests are Ohio Department of Transportation District 8 Public Information Officer Kathleen Fuller and Kentucky Transportation Cabinet District 6 Public Information Officer Jay Kreil. You can join the discussion by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. So I want to talk about what's on everybody's mind right now, probably most people's mind, traffic. Okay, so I'm going to kick this one to you, Jake, first. Southbound traffic has been affected the most by this. What changes have Kentucky transportation officials made to relieve congestion while the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge southbound lanes remain closed?
Well, I would say that our approach has been twofold, right? We have Newport and we have the city of Covington, where obviously we know that the folks are coming from Cincinnati, especially in those afternoon hours going into northern Kentucky after they get off work. That's when we're experiencing really the majority of delays that we're seeing on the Taylor Southgate, on the Roebling, on the Clay Wade Bailey Bridge. So our approach was twofold. First, we really wanted to look at the traffic flow patterns, evaluate them for a given period of time, just so that we understood, okay, this emergency repair is happening right now. Where are people going? What's the direction that they're taking? And when are they doing it? So we didn't necessarily jump the gun on making any changes right off the bat. However, you know, a week or two into all of this, we did make several changes at 5 strategic intersections in the city of Newport along Kentucky 8, allowing more green time during the hours of 2 p.m. And initially it was at 6 p.m. And, you know, one of the great things that we did was we put that on our social media platform and we heard back from people. They were saying, you need to have it longer. It's got to be longer than 6 o'clock. So then we pushed it to 7 o'clock and we still had people commenting on it saying, hey, this is what it's looking like at 7:30 and it's still backed up. So we've pushed it now back to 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. at those 5 strategic intersections along Kentucky 8. Basically, what we're trying to do is flush the traffic from Taylor Southgate Bridge over to I-471 southbound through Newport and getting them onto the highway, the mainline highway, as quickly as we can, as efficiently, but also as safely as we can as well. So, you know, we've had a lot of people say, you know, just give it all the green time that you possibly can. Don't worry about any of the other streets. Well, we can't do that for a number of reasons. You know, there's pedestrians that we also have to take into account with everything, as well as the side streets. You know, there's Monmouth, which is a major corridor through the city of Newport that we have to worry about as well. So that's on the Newport side of things. On the city of Covington, about a week or so after we made those signal adjustments, we had KYTC engineers go out and install in the cabinets, controllers, new controllers at 47 different intersections throughout the state, state routes throughout Covington. So you're talking about, you know, Madison and 4th and 5th Street, 12th Street, so MLK, at all of these different intersections. And what those controllers really do is provide us a better opportunity for our engineers to see exactly how efficient and how well those signals are operating, and to be able to make real-time adjustments to be able to get more folks through safely, but efficiently as well, so that we're not necessarily giving too much green time to a side street that's not seeing any traffic at a certain time of day. So those engineers now are able to really, in a sense, talk back to those traffic cabinets and be able to provide them with more efficiency to be able to get the traffic flowing. And I want to caveat that with, you know, we understand that there are always going to be, you know, with this situation, there are going to be times where traffic is backed up, especially during those peak traffic travel at times in the afternoon and the morning rush. You can't replace, you know, when you have 100,000 people taking a bridge every single day, you can't just take that away and expect everything to be okay. You know, so what we've been doing is trying to encourage folks to leave early, make sure that they have a plan in place and have a backup plan in place. Because all it takes now is just one crash or two crashes, and next thing you know, we've got more incidents than what we really want to have. So make sure that you're always checking your smart devices, your GPS, so that you're taking the most efficient way to get to where you are, and give yourself plenty of extra time. But know that we're doing what we can to be able to try to alleviate as much congestion as we can.
Yeah. So the traffic signal thing is fascinating to me. Talk to me a little bit more about how timing traffic signals can help relieve the congestion. I think you kind of touched on it, but let's go there again just a little bit.
Well, I think the important thing to note, too, is that, you know, with signal timing, you can't, if you just adjust one, that throws the entire corridor out of sync. So it's not just as simple as providing one signal with a little bit more green time. You have to be looking at side streets and other signals as well. But being able to, as we mentioned, flush out that traffic as quickly and efficiently as we can on the Taylor South Gate, getting them through that roundabout in Newport. And then they have the decision, if they want to, they can go to Route 9 and go through Wilder, and they don't even have to get on 471. And some of the traffic will do that. You know, it's interesting to see kind of the routes that people are taking now that they have this option that they didn't have to worry about before. But our goal ultimately is to be able to get that traffic through as quickly as we can. But at the same time, being cognizant of, you know, streets like Monmouth and the fact that Newport on the Levee is right there, there's going to be a lot of pedestrians. So, you know, there have been times where folks have been a little bit frustrated that there's just not enough green time, right? Well, there's never going to be enough green time. But we have to be aware of that and make sure that, you know, pedestrians are able to safely cross the intersections when they need to, and that the side streets, the Monmouths, are able to be able to flush out as well.
Yeah, yeah. In a perfect world, we'd always have green lights all the time, and physics doesn't really want that. So,
yeah.
Kathleen, the last estimate I heard, let's go back to repairs for a minute. The last estimate I heard was that it would cost about $10 million for the repairs to this bridge. I know that's a really tentative estimate.
Yeah.
Any updates on that and where the money is going to come from?
Okay. So no real updates at this point. Of course, we'll be sharing that information. When we get to the end of the project, we'll be able to provide everybody with basically a total breakdown of everything. So we were just kind of putting together some estimates. And I know, you know, when we execute an emergency contract, a lot of times we just kind of put in a number as a placeholder for things, knowing that it may change. You know, it could be the materials, it could be the number of crews. There are a lot of different things that are going to come into play here. You know, we also, in addition just to our contractors that are doing the work for us, Great Lakes Construction, we also have consulted with a few different design firms. I believe one of them might have been the Robinson Group. There are several different design firms. We've been consulting with people all over the place, you know, from around the country, because this was such a unique structure in a lot of ways. We don't build bridges, this type of a girder system on a bridge, this way anymore. It's not that this was wrong, don't get me wrong, you know, but almost 50 years ago, and I don't know when it was designed, but basically 50 years ago when this was being designed, this was a more unique structure, and it was done this way for whatever reason. So now we have to rebuild it in kind, because we're not building all new. We're kind of, you know, putting this kind of, we're marrying, right, with what's there, with what, you know, we have to put in there. So we have to build in kind. So again, very unique, very customized project. So we've been consulting with people so that we could get this expedited. this type of a project normally, if we had to go in and repair or replace the approach spans just because of typical wear and tear, it would have been a three-year type of project from start to finish where we would have done the design and we would have been working on all of these parts that we have to play out now in just a matter of a few weeks. We would have had those. We would have had a lot more time, right? And we would have been coming up with those estimates. Now we just kind of are throwing everything together very quickly. So again, the numbers may change. We're saying at least $10 million. Again, that's just kind of, we've been throwing out some numbers and people are saying, okay, we think this is what it's going to be. When we talk materials and getting those fabricators to get those things expedited to us, this is what the contractors are seeing, you know, as far as getting shoring towers installed and doing the demo work, getting the 550-ton crane that came in yesterday and got assembled and is what's being used to take down those girders. So we're putting those numbers together. But again, the total number we won't have till we get closer to the end or when this is all wrapped up. As far as paying for it, it will come out of ODOT's funding. We'll be paying for the repairs. Due to the emergency declaration by the governor, Governor Mike DeWine, we will be able to pursue some federal emergency dollars, you know, emergency relief dollars for it, and we will do that. But I don't know, you know, how much or when that will happen as far as, like, if we receive any money, how much we receive and when. So, again, we'll let everybody know the total as we get closer to the finish or when we're kind of wrapping things up, but... yeah, $10 million is our estimate right now.
Got it. We touched on this earlier, but I'll ask again, and then I have a follow-up. What's the latest on when the lanes on the bridge could reopen? This is probably first and foremost on a lot of people's mind right now.
Oh, the southbound structure?
We'll start southbound, and then I want to ask you about that northbound lane, too.
So southbound, we hope to have everything reopened in early March, and that is pending, again, material deliveries, the weather. You know, we're going to be building in the winter, and everybody knows what winter in Southern Ohio is like. You know, we see these crazy weather days where it's rain, and then it's freezing, and then it's snow. We don't know what we're going to get in terms of the weather, but they are going to work as much as they possibly can, you know, 6 days a week. You know, and we may pick up some double shifts later on when we get the girders in, you know, working extended hours. So we're hoping that if everything goes according to the plan in place, that we'll be having traffic back on southbound 471 in early March.
I see.
And northbound.
Northbound, yes. I didn't answer.
That's right. That's where I was going next. I wasn't going to let that go.
Yeah. Jake, how dare you? Yeah, you want to
talk about that northbound lane.
Okay,
yeah.
So we do have northbound, a single lane closure on northbound 471 because the parapet wall on the northbound side, right adjacent to where the fire occurred, was heavily damaged as well. And that parapet wall needs to be replaced. Hopefully, the contractors will be getting started with that replacement this week, possibly. I don't know if they're going to be working on that today while they're taking down the girders, too. But maybe by tomorrow, they'll start working on that parapet wall on the northbound side. And they get that all wrapped up. And we should have that single lane closure, have that lifted before the end of the year, maybe a little bit ahead of that. I don't want to jump too far ahead and have our folks who are, I'm sure they're all listening in right now, Tom and Chris and Jason are all probably listening in going, yeah, don't commit us to something. But by the end of the year, we should have that single lane closure on I-471 northbound lifted. But I think they'll be able to get all of that repair work done with just a single lane closure and not taking any more lanes on 471 north. So
I'm sure people are really glad to hear that. So we had a listener call in, and he wanted to know what happened. How did the fire start? What was going on with that? So I know that this is not your purview. This is mostly Cincinnati right. Fire Department mm-hmm. investigating this, and there were four people charged in relation to that yesterday. We don't know a lot of the details yet, but those are probably forthcoming. But I wondered if you had anything to add, Kathleen,
No. You know, obviously, this is a matter of investigation by Cincinnati Fire and Cincinnati Police. They're doing a great job. We really do appreciate their meticulous and being very, you know, very, very thorough to get this and get it right. So really, we can't comment on that. I don't have any other information. I couldn't tell you how the fire started, the causes or anything. So, and again, that's something that the investigation team through the city of Cincinnati will, I know that they will get this done and they will tell everyone all the information they have. But again, it's their investigation, and we're really appreciative of their efforts, because they really have been putting a lot of time into this and making sure that they get it right.
Yeah.
It's a testament just to how well that investigation is rolling. I mean, they have several people charged already.
And I would like to just point out, too, you know, we talk about all the behind-the-scenes work that we're doing at ODOT, and KYTC can, you know, do that as well with all of the work they do. We do so much behind-the-scenes that people don't see. That's also happening with Cincinnati Fire and Cincinnati Police. There's so much stuff, and they can't. You know, I just want people to know they can't always speak to these things, because it is an investigation. You don't want to jeopardize the investigation. We can talk about our behind-the-scenes work, and we're happy to talk about it, because, again, we want people to know we got, you know, hundreds of people, dozens of companies and people working on this project almost 24/7. Talking to one of our Tom from Great Lakes Construction said, you know, I went to bed midnight. I was getting emails. This is, you know, I'm getting emails. I wake up early in the morning, 4 a.m., emails are still coming in. And this is people going back and forth on those design elements for the demo and for the rebuild. So people are working on this all the time. And we can talk about that. So,
Yeah. So I want to leave us with this last question. And I think people have this on their mind. And I just want to throw it out there to kind of put it out there. Should drivers be worried about using this bridge after it's repaired?
No. We'll have it. You know, we are doing, yes, we are working very fast. And typically, I know I say, oh, these types of projects would take much longer. We're expediting everything. We're expediting because it's an emergency. We have to get this open to traffic. We can't take our time. We can't take, you know, 2 to 3 years to rebuild it. And again, when I say 3 years, I'm talking total start to finish, like project design all the way through. We can't take six, you know, we got to get it done. We know that. But we're going to assure that everything is built properly, that it's built safe, that it's built to all the standards. It will be tested, trust me. The fabricators, these are vetted. You know, the companies or the suppliers are vetted. We're vetting everybody and everything on this, but we are working as quickly as possible. But again, it will be safe.
I've been speaking with Ohio Department of Transportation District 8 Public Information Officer Kathleen Fuller and Kentucky Transportation Cabinet District 6 Public Information Officer Jake Ryle. Thank you both so much for being here and for sharing all the information you shared.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Up next, tips for a more sustainable gift giving. This is Cincinnati Edition.